It's 7:41 on this West Virginia morning. I'm John Cantese. In an effort to continue the fight against rising overdoses, Cabell County is now offering a course teaching members of the community how to administer a potentially life-saving drug, naloxone.
Any and every effort that we can do at this point to address this epidemic, we must do.
This story and more coming up on this West Virginia morning. But first, this news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. Healthcare, Wall Street, and gun control were among the main issues in last night's Democratic presidential debate sponsored by NBC News. As NPR's Ron Elving reports, Hillary Clinton called for building on the Affordable Care Act while Bernie Sanders pushed for a single-payer system.
Bernie Sanders had earlier in the day laid out his health care plan in more detail than we had seen before and in much greater ambitiousness than we had seen before from him in some of the other things that he has proposed, basically going back to Franklin Roosevelt's concept of health care for every man, woman, and child as a right.
That debate was held in Charleston, South Carolina. A new study suggests the number of Americans aged 65 and older will be more than double by the year 2060. NPR's Ina Jaffe reports.
The report's from the Population Reference Bureau, and it projects that spending on Social Security and Medicare will increase from 8% of gross domestic product now to 12% by 2050 if there are no changes to the programs. On the other hand, the numbers of people remaining in the workforce after age 65 will also grow.
The National Weather Service has posted wind chill warnings and advisories from the Dakotas to Pennsylvania to the mountains of western North Carolina. In Duluth, Minnesota right now, it's 18 degrees below zero. I'm Dave Mattingly in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Chevrolet with the all-new 2016 Chevrolet Malibu, offering available teen driver technology to encourage safe driving habits for new drivers with a feature that can mute the radio until the front seat occupant's safety belts are fastened. Chevy.com. And from Emma, Email Marketing. Built for modern marketing teams who want to create personalized email programs. Emma, on a mission to help marketers do their very best work. Learn more at myemma.com.
You're listening to West Virginia Morning. I'm John Cantese. Cabell County is often thought of as ground zero for the opioid epidemic in West Virginia, but the county is working to expand its substance abuse services. The Cabell-Huntington Health Department began a needle exchange program in the fall to help prevent the spread of diseases like hepatitis and HIV, which are linked to drug use, and now they're offering a course teaching members of the community how to administer naloxone. But as Clark Davis reports, not many doctors are prescribing naloxone just yet, which means the life-saving drug isn't as readily available as many had hoped it would be.
C.K. Babcock, a professor from the Marshall University School of Pharmacy, will offer two sessions of naloxone certification classes every Wednesday. They're offered in conjunction with the Harm Reduction Needle Exchange Program at the Cabell-Huntington Health Department. It's a county that recorded over 900 drug overdoses and 70 overdose deaths last year. The hope is to offer those who live and are associated with drug users a chance to be trained in the use of a tool that could save lives during an overdose.
Grab the Narcan, yell at somebody to dial 911, and give Narcan. If it's the intranasal product, depends on which product you have, you may have to put it together. Or if you have the newer product, it comes all together in one. If it's the injectable product, you actually pull the cap off and it walks you through, it talks to you. It tells you to shove it and it actually sticks them and gives them a dose.
That's Babcock on how to administer the drug, which blocks receptors in the brain from attaching to opioids like heroin and oxycodone. Narcan is the brand name for a nasal spray version of the drug naloxone. It's also available as an auto-injector. Babcock says he has trained medical professionals and officials on how to administer the drug, and he's trained over 100 citizens on how to use and administer naloxone as well. But on some Wednesdays, no one in the health department obtaining needles are there taking the naloxone classes. Part of the reason, Babcock says, is there aren't many doctors who will prescribe the medicine.
I think a lot of people are afraid of liability. People are afraid that, you know, they could hurt somebody or that it may be misused. Just think they don't feel as knowledgeable as they should be. And I don't feel that many of them feel that they understand the rules from the Board of Medicine yet. I think they're still trying to get their hands wrapped around those.
The reasons vary, says Babcock, from liability to not wanting to give a prescription to one patient for it to be used on another, and not wanting to be known as the only doctor in town who will provide the prescription. Dr. Rahul Gupta is the commissioner for the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources Bureau for Public Health and the state's health officer. He says doctors just need more education on the medicine and their role in slowing down the drug overdose epidemic. Gupta says that according to a study in the Journal of Urban Health, it's not a problem that's uncommon in the prescribing of naloxone. He says it's similar to the problems doctors have with prescribing opiates to patients diagnosed with chronic pain.
Good prescribing, practicing physicians don't want to be labeled as the place to go to get naloxone. However, the challenge ahead of us as a community, I think, across the state is we do have this epidemic in front of us. We are all partners in addressing this epidemic, and we cannot escape addressing this epidemic.
Gupta says the state isn't opposed to looking into different ideas, such as one Babcock suggested about looking into taking the doctor out of the equation.
I think we have to take a multifaceted, multi-systems approach towards this, as we are doing. So we know that our leaders are looking at this as a multifaceted approach. So I think any and every effort that we can do at this point to address this epidemic, we must do it.
Chris Edwards is a nurse at the Cabell Huntington Health Department. She says the harm reduction and needle exchange program in Huntington are showing some successes. But to not be able to get naloxone directly in the hands of those who need it is frustrating.
I mean, Narcan's a simple and safe fix to stop that, you know, our overdose rates being so high. You can't get it. I don't understand. We have the highest overdose rate per capita in our nation, and Narcan's not available over the counter or even to try to get it for prescription. Just so many hoops you have to jump through.
Dr. Michael Kikilny is the director for the Cabell Huntington Health Department. He says it's those closest to the addicts who would make the biggest difference.
It's going to be the family member who has the greatest opportunity to intervene in what would be a fatal overdose situation with naloxone, and really got to push that out there to get that in their hands so that they can use it.
Dr. Rahul Gupta says it comes down to the need for education for not just the public, but physicians as well. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Clark Davis in Huntington.
You're listening to West Virginia Morning at 7:49. Today it will be becoming a little sunny in the south, and it's going to be a little cloudier in northern regions of the state with some isolated snow flurries. Highs will mostly be in the teens. Catholic Committee of Appalachia just published a pastoral letter, just the third such letter in the group's 46-year history. 40 years ago, the committee's first pastoral letter focused on poverty and powerlessness in Appalachia and attempted to inspire new movements for justice. The letter was acclaimed as one of the most significant statements to emerge from the U.S. Catholic Church. And according to the West Virginia Encyclopedia, decades later, the committee is once again focused on the stories of the region's people with the release of its pastoral letter titled, "The Telling Takes Us Home." Glynis Board reports.
When the story of these mountains as resource takes over the story of the mountains as home, we become homeless in our own place and disconnected from earth and one another. These are some of the opening lines of "The Telling Takes Us Home," taking our place in the stories that shape us. That's the title of a new pastoral letter released from the Catholic Committee of Appalachia. The committee is a network of faith-based people who are focused on addressing social justice issues in Appalachia. The lead author of the letter is Michael Iafrate, a Wheeling resident completing a doctorate in theology.
The pastoral itself is a telling of the story of Appalachia and the people that are here and all of our diversity. And it's a telling of the church at the grassroots that's committed to justice, which is often a contrary voice in larger church contexts. And it's, I think, a way that people of faith can take their place in the larger stories of struggle for justice.
Committee members organized listening sessions with religious and non-religious alike over a four-year period. Their listening sessions especially targeted marginalized groups like women, minors, the homeless and imprisoned, people of color, and folks with a variety of sexual orientations. The resulting missive is 60 pages written in an open verse poetic form, studded with Parkersburg native Christopher Santers' paintings of mountains that have been surface mined. Iafrate says themes of the open letter are similar to many of the recent messages from Pope Francis. The pontiff has been preaching about moral obligations to care for the earth and the wisdom to be learned on that subject from marginalized populations most affected by ecological devastation.
I remember how significant the first pastoral was, and this is like the first one.
Jacqueline Hanrahan is a lawyer and a Catholic nun from the Congregation of Notre Dame. She's also the director of the Appalachian Faith and Ecology Center and has been a member of the Catholic Committee of Appalachia since 1982. On sort of a steering committee for the pastoral, she says the letter came from a need to give people hope and spread a message of inclusivity. Now, the first and second people's pastorals were endorsed by Catholic bishops from Appalachia, but this most recent letter comes without endorsement from any church hierarchy.
This time, we felt we wouldn't get them, to be honest, you know, because some of them had already told us that they wouldn't have signed the first one. These were bishops who came later.
Sister Jackie does credit many of the southern bishops in Appalachia for helping to fund this latest pastoral, but after some thought, the committee decided no endorsements were really necessary.
We are the people of God, you know, as church, and we have this authority, as it says on page 5, I'm looking at it, by lifting up the authority of these stories, we Christians at the grassroots hope to contribute to the growing movement that is telling a new story about our region. This is a pastoral message from the people themselves to our region, to the world, and to the churches, leaders and laity alike. And we are accepting the freedom that we have as people to name a truth that sometimes those in authority aren't free to name.
So we're really hoping for a grassroots kind of viral spreading of this message with all sorts of groups, not just Catholic, but beyond, and even beyond people of faith.
Lead author Michael Iafrate calls the letter an ecumenical gift exchange in the work for social justice. But non-religious folks also reviewed the pastoral before publication.
And many of them said that they were able to find their voice in the document as well, which was really important to all of us, you know, that the document be something that can help build bridges for the work for justice.
Iafrate says lots of different people are trying to tell a new story of what it means to be Appalachian these days. He says the pastoral from the Catholic Committee of Appalachia is a way for people of faith to join that chorus. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Glynis Board in Wheeling.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. And make sure that you send your comments to feedback@wvpublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Chuck Anzalevich, and I'm John Cantese.